Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. Great show lined up for you today because there are a lot of topics to get to, a lot of topics. I'm your host, Adam Mattes, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler. Legs, it's been a busy couple of days since we last talked.
Yeah, a lot going on in the league, and we're going to try to get to as much of the pertinent and relevant stuff as we can, and I think we're going to start, right, with a couple of younger teams that we probably need to talk about right now. One, maybe more so for their early start that they had, and one for the way that they're playing right now. So let's get into it.
I'm excited. Those two teams are, of course, the Orlando Magic and the Houston Rockets. I put this out on Twitter today asking which of those two teams has a brighter future, and the results were like 50-50 split. A lot of people chiming in on that one, so I thought it was very interesting. We'll talk about that. The Magic beat the Wizards last night. The Magic are streaking. The Wizards are streaking in the wrong direction. The Rockets fall to the Clippers last night. We'll get into that one. And then, of course, the Warriors bounced back in a big way against the Bucks. We'll also talk to Karl-Anthony Towns injury news and quickly run through some of the other games in the association. So it'll be a very full show for you tonight. We are presented, as always, by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all they have to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, we're going to open up with this Orlando Magic game. They get a win. I actually thought it was a pretty unimpressive win, 119-109 over the Washington Wizards. The fourth quarter had some very ugly play. Orlando has not been the best closing team in the NBA, but they were going up against the Washington Wizards and were able to pull it out in the final 5 minutes. But what stood out to you about this game as you were watching it, Legs?
All right, you know, I'm going to take a different slant. I think it was very impressive, and even though it's the Wizards, and they've lost a bunch of games in a row, they've won 9 games all year. I get it. They play an ugly brand of basketball. I don't think it's, very difficult to guard them. You name it. Like, it's a bad basketball team. But here's why I think it's an impressive win. I watched every play of this game because I knew I was going to be talking about them last night on TV too and today. So they definitely were not in the proper state of readiness at the start of the game, the first half of the game. They just weren't. And Washington is a team that can play fast-paced. They've got some guys that can put the ball in the basket. And if you come out and you're kind of a little lethargic or a step behind or not engaged to the level that you need to, you're going to find yourself in a pretty big hole. They were down 21 points in this game in the second quarter. 21. And they took a timeout at that point, and they dug into it a little bit. I believe it was 12 by halftime, so they kind of whittled it down. And then I just was so impressed with the way they played in the second half. There was such a purpose and a thought process of not messing around anymore and taking advantage of every single mismatch that they had. They moved the ball. They played with great energy defensively. I thought Jalen Suggs really set the tone there. We're going to get into him more in a little bit. He was phenomenal defensively in the second half. I thought Banchero, who didn't really get involved offensively, all of a sudden he took over the game, really, and he just won every matchup that he got. And Franz Wagner was good throughout the entire game. And then Mo Wagner gave them a huge lift in the fourth quarter. He was really the guy that kind of carried it home for them with a bunch of production in a very short period of time. So I think it's an impressive one because it's a young team that didn't look like they had it, Adam. And you got a team like Washington – they don't smell too many games where they think they're going to win. And when a team that bad kind of senses that, they can be hard, like, to flip that script. And they did it. And they did it very, they did it going away. They did it very impressively. The way that they dismantled this team in the second half, I just thought it was very businesslike for a young team that clearly wasn't up for this game. The way that they kind of re-engaged at halftime, and I don't know what Jamal Mosley said to them or whoever, you know, the leader of that team is. Maybe it's a guy like Joe Ingles. You know, maybe he's got something to say at halftime. Whoever, they came out with a very businesslike approach, and that's why I was impressed with it.
I think they don't win pretty very often. That when they win, it usually is ugly and gritty and kind of like it was last night. They don't always fall behind the way they did, you know, in this game. But I like that you brought up Jalen Suggs, because to me, so often when I watch the Magic, and they're one of my favorite, you know, lesser teams, you know, not a team that you think of as a contender. They're one of my favorite ones to watch that are in that category. And every time I watch them, I always feel like the turning point in any game usually comes from Jalen Suggs, because that guy's a winner. He plays hard and he makes the type of plays that I think make the rest of the team feel good. And he had several of those, to your point, right out of the gate in the second half last game. And so I do credit him. I feel like that is an important role on a team. We call him a spark plug, usually when they're off the bench, but he's sort of a starter spark plug. He brings energy to the game that the other team sort of, it's infectious energy.
I agree. Look, I think when you look at the way they played, I wanted to analyze them possession by possession and offensively, because I saw them a lot early and I was kind of having some fun early in the season. I was like, you know, I was joking like, okay, you know, let's talk about them now because this isn't going to last. Half kidding. I kind of wanted to see, because I didn't expect them to get out of the gate the way they did. I didn't expect their roster to be as good as their record indicates. But I changed my thinking on that a while ago. They're a very good, entertaining, fun team. They play hard. They've got really good chemistry. They support each other. They seem to be connected to their coach. And then I think the big upside for them, for me, and I wanted to make sure I got this right, so I went and checked every team in the NBA last night because I was curious, and I was right. This is the only team in the NBA whose best two players are 6'10 and up. There's not another team in the league. Not one team in the league can say it. And I, you know, unless you wanted to say, you know, no, because I was, you can't even make the case for Gobert because it's Anthony Edwards and Towns. Like most teams, it's a guard and a big, or it's two forwards, and the forwards aren't as big as these two guys. They're the only team in the league. I went team by team. They're the
New
only
Orleans
team
might be the closest with Zion and Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, but Zion's like 6'7".
Oh, you're right. That's actually, he's not that big. You're right. He's
Zion. No, so you know, I'm just on a pure factual basis. It's true. That's the only team. And why is that important? It's important because the versatility of these two guys, combined with their size. Now you're talking about two guys that can take it off the glass and lead the break anytime. Both of them have one-on-one capability on the perimeter with their handle in like a face-up situation. Right. They can both shoot the three, and they're both physical, strong finishers because of their size and length, and they absorb contact really well. So I look at the versatility of these two guys and how well they gel together, and man, there's a lot to like there. And that's kind of what I was taking away from this game, was just the number of different ways that they operated offensively, those two guys. And then they have these other pieces that go around them. You know, they got role players for the most part. I said early, Adam, I was concerned about a team that has no legitimate traditional lead guard. They don't have one. They have got four or five guards they play. None of those guys you would describe as like an actual like point guard. Right. They're all sort of combo guards, whether it's Anthony Black or Cole Anthony. Right. Or Suggs, or I'm forgetting somebody.
Fultz, even.
Yeah, Markelle Fultz is another one. So like, they're all kind of the same. Like, and they're not prototypical points. They're not like elite scoring guards. So they've got this interesting collection of guys, but it's built around the size and versatility of those two players. And they delivered again last night, 53 points between them, 19 for 34 from the field. Can't do it more efficiently than that. 11 boards, 12 assists between them. That's a great night, and they didn't have particularly a great start.
Yeah, and now they find themselves fourth in the East, which I think a lot of people would be surprised. If you haven't been looking at the standings and doing this day by day, they sit at 37-26. That's a half a game ahead of the Knicks, a full game ahead of the Heat, and now a game and a half ahead of the 76ers, who are reeling right now. Look, it's a long season. They're on a soft part of their season right now, which is part of why they've gotten these wins. They have it's an impressive win streak, but not necessarily impressive who they've been beating. But nonetheless, I look at this right now and I go, we've been waiting for a team to separate. They haven't separated, but the Magic seem to be the last team. The first team we pencil out, and we say, who's going to separate between that bunch? It's always like, well, not the Magic. But here they are, legs at the four seed. What do you make of that?
They are 13-3 in their last 16 games. I mean, that's over a month of play. And you're right. They've got some good wins in there, too. I mean, sure. They have a win during that time that I'm talking about. They have a win over Minnesota. The win over Chicago is not easy. That's not a great team, but they're like a 500 type team. They got a win over the Knicks, the Cavs. Those are the signature wins. These last five, Brooklyn, Utah, Detroit, Charlotte, Washington, it's practically the last three. Right. Detroit, Charlotte, Washington, I mean, you can't get an easier stretch than that. But to their credit, they're beating these teams. And, you know, and the defense is consistent. Four out of the last six games, they've held teams under 100 points. I don't care who you're playing and what, you know, who they roll out there. It's the modern NBA. The floor is spread. Teams take 43s. It's harder to guard guys. Holding any team to under 100 points is difficult. They've done it four out of their last six wins. So, look, there's a lot to like. And like you said, the bottom line is, I guarantee you, you know, most people that, like, are NBA fans, but they're not addicts, you know, where they're watching everything and they're every day they're getting up and it's the first page they look at is that page, NBA.com or ESPN.com or whatever. Like, I'm talking about the majority of NBA fans. I'm telling you right now, if you just went and quizzed people and said, can you tell me who the top four teams are in the Eastern Conference right now? I don't know how many of those people would have listed Orlando Magic. It kind of snuck up on people because we've talked about Boston and Milwaukee all year. Milwaukee sometimes for negative reasons. Boston's been incredible. And then of course, the surging Knicks at one point before they got banged up. The Cavs got a lot of shine here lately because of how well they've played and they've snuck up on people. And then you always have the Heat that gets a lot of talk. And then the Sixers got a bunch of talk in the beginning of the year. So the Magic weren't just there and they just plugging along. And now they hit this stretch and they elevate themselves to fourth. And guess what, Adam? I got news for you. They're going to be in the mix for the fourth spot the rest of the year. I think I'm not saying they're going to get it, but it's possible the Orlando Magic could host a first-round playoff series in the Eastern Conference. And that would be just an incredible progression and leap with such a young team.
Yeah, and I'm looking at their schedule right now. They have some duds, you know, sprinkled in there. Some teams that are Charlotte, another one against Chicago. They have some games that are going to be pretty winnable down the stretch. So it'll be interesting to see. Their next one on Friday is against the Knicks. And that one, obviously, a team they're basically tied with in the standings. So that one sort of takes on a double meaning. If we go back really quickly just to the roster construction.
Yeah.
Because I'm interested in your point about the two best players being basically forwards. Is that a recipe? I mean, we haven't seen it. Is that breaking the mold and starting a new one, or is there a reason that you don't usually see your two best players both being 6'10"?
Yeah, because typically one of those two guys has to be really good with the ball, and they've got two guys that are. I mean, they're both really good with the basketball. And Banchero's dimensions are not that much different than Karl Malone's or LeBron James. I mean, the guy weighs 250-plus pounds. He's 6'10". He is so good. He likes to run inverted pick and rolls where he's the ball handler and he calls a guard to set it. And one of those smaller guards that I mentioned will come over, set the pick. And of course, in the NBA now, 90% of those are switches, even when you don't need to because it's 30 feet out on the floor. I've never understood why teams switch when it's not advantageous because it's just built in. Like, that's what we're going to do on every ball screen. Well, why would you do that 30 feet from the basket? But he gets them. He hunts them out. And you know what he does when he gets one of those guys? He comes off. He immediately will turn his back. He'll pound you 3-4 times with his shoulder into your chest, and then he'll spin off and he'll get to the rim. He is a load to handle for those guys. He's a load to handle for even forwards that are 6'8", 6'9", much less guards that are 6'5", and under. He destroys those guys. So I think the reason you don't see more often that it's two forwards paired up, and look, Boston's a good example. And, you know, those guys are Jason Tatum is listed. I don't know if he's listed at 6'9", 6'10". Jaylen Brown's about 6'7", 6'8". So they're close. So I was just kind of having fun with the numbers there. You know, when you look on paper, LeBron is listed at 6'9". Him and AD, like people pick that up. No, not quite. He's not 6'10", which is what I said. So, and then Wagner is much better with the basketball than I thought he was going to be. Like,
I love his game.
Man, he goes back and forth with that dribble in an ISO situation. He had one on Kuzma in the first half where, and Kuzma, you would think would be a little bit quicker. Laterally, he went back and forth rocker step, and when he finally decided to cross over left to right and go, His first step was so lightning that the two defenders that were underneath the basket, that were on the opposite side of the lane, they never moved, and he was laying the ball in. It was such a quick in-rhythm move. It was very impressive. So that's why they're able to get away with the way that they play through these two guys, because you can't keep them in a box. They handle the ball too well, and they're too versatile in the ways that they could put the ball in the basket.
Yeah. My big concern for them is going to be in the clutch in playoffs. So many games in playoffs come down to the final 5 minutes and how you execute. And they're the same thing we've talked about with some of these better teams, even the Clippers, the Celtics. What is your end game actions?
Minnesota.
They're another team. Magic are another team to me that I don't love their end game actions. And last night they did close the door on Washington. So it says, I'm being nitpicky here. They did close the door on Washington, but Banchero had an ISO that hit the side of the backboard on Kyle Kuzma. And I've watched him enough in the crunch time to know, like, all right, they're really good one-on-one scorers, but it's almost wholly reliant on that kind of play in the clutch. And that's one thing that concerns me about him.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I know Banchero, I think, has got 3 game winners this year. So he's made some big shots late. And I saw them early in the year. I don't know if you remember this. We had a conversation at the very beginning of the season, and they were like 5-2 or something out of the gate. We were talking about the Magic. And I remember at the end of that game I watched the night before, it was Franz Wagner like ISOing the last 3 minutes. And I'm going, I don't know if that's going to be good enough, like, in this league, that Franz Wagner's your go-to ISO player. But number one, he's better at it than I thought. He's gotten more comfortable with it. Still don't know that that's, you're not on the level of, obviously, Jason Tatum. You're not on the level of a KD or a Luka or, a Kawhi or, a Jokic. Like, you're not on that level. I get it. But it's pretty darn good. And they've done a great job with some of these picks. And even a guy like Suggs, I want to point out, I watch every single night. I watch these guards around the league. And I'm telling you, go find a guard that plays harder defensively than Jalen Suggs.
Nobody.
The way that he pressures the ball when, like, 35 to 40 feet out, you don't see guards typically doing it. And if you do it, once the guy gives the ball up, like, that was your pressure for the possession, whatever, that 3 seconds, right? And then you go back to normal defense. Last night he had a play that really stood out to me. He denied Jordan Poole the ball. He got on the high side. Poole was trying to run through his chest, basically, to get out to half court to get the ball. So he denied him all the way out. Finally, Poole breaks free literally 40 feet from the basket. So that's how hard he had to work to get out there. Suggs turns around. He's literally within arm's reach of him that deep in a stance. Poole calls one screen over. Suggs goes under the screen and immediately meets him on the other side and then closes the gap, and he's pressuring him again at 40 feet. And then Poole calls a second screen over, and that time he fights over the screen. And so that whole sequence took maybe 8, 9, 10 seconds. And at no point was he further than arm's reach away from Poole that round on the court. Guys just aren't willing to work that hard. So he's super impressive with his defense. He loves to play it. His offense is kind of hit or miss some nights. It's inconsistent. If he's making his perimeter shot like he did last night, he made a couple. He had actually 5 for 10 from the three. If he's shooting the three like that, he's a much better player. That comes and goes. I'm impressed with his defense. So I think there's a lot to build on. I love how hard they play. And I just love watching the versatility of those two players, Banchero and Wagner. I just think that they're really fun to watch. And it seems like they have a lot of respect for each other and a lot of chemistry between each other, which is going to be important going forward.
Meanwhile, the Wizards have lost 16 in a row. There's just enough time in the season left legs for them to set a new record. We already had one losing record set this year. There's just enough games for them to break that one if they're unable to find a victory here going forward. We're going to talk more Magic on the other side of the break when we compare them to the Houston Rockets. But we got to talk about the Rockets game from last night, which featured the Clippers as well, who have been a little unimpressive. I thought it was an unimpressive Clippers game last night as well, even though they were able to get the win. So we'll get to that, as well as Karl-Anthony Towns' injury and a whole lot more on the other side. But first, get in on the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers who deposit $5 or more, they get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 back in bonus bets immediately. And what a night to bet on the NBA. Not only do we have the Timberwolves going into Indiana playing the Pacers. Pacers are 1.5-point favorite, and that game should be a close. But we also get the Boston Celtics coming into Denver. I can't believe it. The Celtics are favored on DraftKings tonight. -1 coming into Denver, the reigning champs. If I were Denver, I'd almost feel disrespected by that line. If you feel disrespected, you can hop on DraftKings Sportsbook and throw a little wager down on the Nuggets. Remember, if you download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code ALLNBA, you get that no-sweat bet up to $1,000 if your first bet loses. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code ALLNBA. The crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. That's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 or older, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no sweat bet per new customer issued as a one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. I also want to tell you guys about AG1. I have been on a health kick lately, and I'm trying to cut out coffee from my morning routine. I had a friend who was telling me he cut out coffee and had all of these crazy benefits, more energy throughout the day. He was having more vivid dreams, which I thought was a very interesting like thing to happen when you stop drinking caffeine of any type. So I'm trying to follow suit. So instead, in mornings, my routine now does not feature coffee. It features AG1. AG1 has all of those supplements and vitamins that you need to get through the day. It tastes delicious and it's easy to make. You just put one scoop into a cup, add 8 ounces of water, stir it around a little bit, and there you go. And it supports your gut health, promotes healthy energy levels in just 60 seconds every single morning. So here's what you got to do. AG1, it's a supplement trusted. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs. The travel packs are nice. They come in this little pack, so you just throw them in your bag. It's just the powder. You rip them open and throw it in like a water bottle or water, a cup of water, anything like that. Stir it up. You can have it from your hotel room. Super easy. So check it out. drinkag1.com/allNBA. That's drinkag1, letters AG, and then the number 1.com/allNBA. Check it out. Back here on the All-NBA Show, if you're watching live, throw us a like. If you're watching it a little bit late, leave us a comment. Let us know our headline question. Who would you take, Houston or Orlando? That's our big question today. You can also let us know in the chat. But first, let's talk about the Houston Rockets. Went to battle with the Clippers. Obviously, their season is now in the tanking era, or the not really trying to make to win a championship or any of that kind of stuff. You're trying to develop young guys. But they took the Rockets down, or the Clippers down to the wire. Clippers do get the win 122-116. What stood out to you about this one, Legs?
I think the first thing that stood out to me is Kawhi Leonard put on a masterclass in the fourth quarter. I mean, it kind of reminds you when you see a guy do what he did in the fourth quarter of this game, how much better guys on that level are than everybody else, right? Because he had like elite defenders on him. He had athletes. He had, you know, dudes that you think would give, you know, a guy, you know, at this stage of his career, maybe a little bit of trouble. He had no trouble. He did what he wanted to do as a scorer, as a passer. He took over the game. There was no answer for him. And I thought that is the first thing that stood out to me. So what had to happen, they're down 20 in this game. If you didn't watch it, they're down 50-30. They call timeout. And from that point on, it was just this uphill climb, whittling away at the lead the entire time. And then it got to the middle of the fourth quarter. It was a one-possession game still. And Kawhi Leonard pretty much ended it. And then there was a couple calls that went against them. They fouled a little bit too much down the stretch and you know, didn't have necessarily great possessions on the other end. But it was mainly about Kawhi, to me. That was the difference. And his ability to be unfazed in those tight spots that he operates in, because it's totally different than a lot of guys in this league that are spaced out, getting a ball screen 30 feet out. And, you know, you can get loose. He doesn't get loose where he plays from. He's always crammed. There's always people hanging on him. Like, he's got people right in his face, and he still gets what he wants when he wants. And I thought that, to me, was really the difference in the game. And the Clippers, give him credit, because you're right, not super impressive win. But on a night when you're getting it handed to you,
right.
You know, some veteran teams, like, do you have the wherewithal to dig deep in a regular season game against the Rockets? And they did, and it mattered to them. And, you know, Paul George wasn't very good most of the game. He was much better in the second half, helped Kawhi out. But it was about Kawhi Leonard for me.
This time of year, with teams that are in the position of Houston, I always watch games like the one last night and wonder, are they in stealth tank mode? Because, yeah, obviously they're 5 games out of the last play-in spot, so that's probably not going to happen for them. So now seeding for the, you know, matters now for the lottery. But I watched last night. The Clippers have 42 points in the third quarter. To your point, they couldn't get it going. The second half, they score 78 points, an enormous amount. Kawhi Leonard is going to work. He's so strong. But we always talk about the Clippers when they're allowed to do what they like to do, get Kawhi the ball on the block or on the elbow, and then allow him to play one-on-one. Yes, you have Dylan Brooks, who's a good defender. But I just thought Houston left him out there a lot, where I was thinking, Kawhi's cooking. He's taking over the game. And you're just kind of trusting him to play. It almost felt to me like a stealth tank job from Houston that they weren't forcing. We know the Clippers struggle when you force them away from that, and then it gets uncomfortable. But last night, the Clippers were able to do exactly what they want to do.
They had an interesting strategy. They did hit him with some blitzes, but they hit him with blitzes only when he was out well beyond the three-point line. Like, and he started to go, or he on the catch a couple times in the first half. They ran at it. But once he got the ball into his wheelhouse, you know, right, where now you're operating in his office, which is, you know, anywhere from 12 to not 20 feet. That's like, yep, where he controls the game. They weren't. You're right. And a couple times, though, like he had two possessions where like they were running double teams at him, and he just basically crossed over, went away from the guy that was coming over, or he spun one time and hit a baseline jumper. So you're right. I think they were a little bit lacking urgency on what they wanted to do. And the reason is because the Clippers – can be one of those teams that can put three, four guys on the court at the same time that can really hurt you from the three-point line. And I think some teams get scared. I think coaches a lot of times coach in a paralyzed way because they're worried about the three-point shot far more than anything else. Guy like Kawhi Leonard, if he starts operating where he hits one or two straight in that area of the floor, you need to get the ball out of his hands. I completely agree. Yeah, I agree.
And then Zubats last night did not play in the second half. Illness, you know, apparently. So he only gets in there 15 minutes. He was a minus 13, did not look great while he was out there. So that's kind of a note on this game as well. What else? Anything else from the Clippers side of this that stood out to you?
Not necessarily. I think it was just, you know, more about the fact that when they got serious about it, they executed. And Rockets, being a younger team, they had a harder time getting the quality shots that they needed when the game was on the line. Our boy, who we both said is key, played very well again in this one. Norman Powell, you know, he just continues to be super consistent. Like, we both agree, like, despite the fact that they've got, you know, Harden, George, and Leonard, both of us, I think, feel like, man, where would they be without Norman Powell? Like, I do feel that way some nights, right? Because he's different the way that he plays than those other guys. He just has a different element that he brings, and he always guards. So it's not like you're just out there as a one-dimensional shooter, but they need that shooting on the other end. You don't give up anything defensively. So, you know, good win. One of those wins that, you know, it doesn't feel maybe like some other ones that are maybe more impressive. But on paper, they all count the same.
I want to go to the other side now because I find the Rockets really fascinating. I mean, first of all, Şengün, 23, 19, and 14 with two steals. He's been putting up some monster numbers really all year, but he's back on a little upswing right now in this last little stretch. 23, 19, and 14 is not a small, especially this wasn't like, as a 122-116 game. That's a good amount of points, but it's not a lot of times when you see a line like that, it's because it's 140 to 135. This wasn't that, and yet he puts up a monster stat line. What did you see from him last night?
Yeah, he had 11 rebounds in the middle of the second quarter. Like, you know, I was like, man, you know, this might be one of those 30-rebound nights like Nurkic had the other night. Right. And, you know, but rebounding is a fickle thing, man. Sometimes you can go over and over and over, and it just doesn't come your way sometimes. So he kind of tailed off. He's still at 19, 14 dimes. Like, you know, we both love him. I mean, he's got a very unique game, the way that he plays, the way he goes about it. Super skilled, and it was all on display last night. He did hurt him a little bit from the foul line. He had some empty trips.
Man, at the end, too. Oof.
They needed him to convert some free throws. He went 3 for 8 overall on the night from the foul line. And it's funny because we're going to get into the discussion of the two teams comparing them, Orlando and the Rockets. And Şengün's a big part of that, obviously, because I think it comes down to a lot of it. What do you think his actual upside is? We talk about the comparisons to Jokic because of the style. But you know what? Right. You're reminded of? He's not Jokic. And it's great because it's a great compliment to say that, like, he plays more like Jokic than anybody else in the league. But there is a level of control that Jokic has over the game that, you know, right now, and Şengün's a young player. Jokic probably wasn't at, how old is Şengün, 20?
Yeah. 21.
When Jokic was that age, he didn't have that level of control either. But I also, I'm looking at Jokic now and I'm saying, you know, it's going to be a different level, I think, than anything Şengün is going to be able to get to, as much as I like him. And I think you saw it in a game like that last night. Like, everything's not going through him when they needed big possessions. And that's the difference between Denver and what Jokic is capable of doing, where he's going to touch the ball every damn time down the floor in an important game, in a tight game. He's going to touch the ball. He has an imprint. And a lot of possessions, Jokic will touch it multiple times in the same possession, right? And there were possessions last night where Şengün didn't touch the ball. And right. I think some of this comes down to, for me, with that team, what is ultimately going to be your identity offensively as you grow with these other young players? Because I think a lot of those guys feel pretty entitled that they can go when they want to. So it's just something that kind of stood out to me. I was watching him going, man, he's such a good player, but you know, we compare him to Jokic, but he is not Jokic. There's one Jokic. Let's be clear about that.
Well, to be fair, you know, his usage percentage last year was about 21.4, this year 27. With a new coach, they clearly have given him more. And when Jokic was 21, I think when Jokic was 21, even his second season, it was more like what we're seeing with Şengün, where they're playing through him a lot, but not every time. He was the emerging as the cornerstone piece, but he wasn't like the cornerstone piece. It was more like, we're going to try to emphasize him. I think Şengün's there. I will say this. What do you think they should do as early as next year? Like, I understand this year you got a lot of young guys, but do you think next year that it's a thing where you look at it and say, no, Şengün needs to be the guy every possession goes through, and they even go up that way? Or do you see so many talented players that maybe they're at the right rate right now?
Well, let me ask you a question first. Refresh my memory. So how many years has Jokic been in the league?
I think nine. I think this is his ninth season.
Ninth? So you went back to that was like what you were just referenced. Was that like year two, three you just were referencing?
So year one, he was like, he surprised everyone. He's come, you know, he was, throw that one out. The second year, the first half of it, he came off the bench. You know, it was a little weird, but once they made him the starter, they started playing through him more and more. And that was the year I was referencing. I would guess, I'll look it up, but I would guess.
Who else was on that team? Like, who were their other primary scoring options on that team?
So nobody. Gallinari, Kenneth Faried. It was guys that weren't quite good enough to be a cornerstone piece on a good team. And then it was young players like Emmanuel Mudiay who were, you know, not good, but they were giving him an opportunity to be good.
Got you. I only asked that because I couldn't remember. And if it was somebody that was like on a higher level, then it kind of would make sense. And that's part of the why maybe he wouldn't be every time down the floor that early in his career. I'm looking at Houston and I don't know that I trust other guys as much. And that's my point. And look, you know, maybe it's just because, you know, it's hard because he's still developing and he's going to be better here over the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. He's going to continue to get better and to add things. But I think I wanted to see more out of him last night when the game was on the line out of the post, because he's got an ability to pass out of the post and to create stuff out of the post as a primary option other guys can play off of. But it's hard when you got Jalen Green, who's going to handle the ball. Like Jabari Smith is, you know, like a perimeter face to basket type player. Yep. Cam Whitmore was playing well last night, so he was kind of active and involved. You got Fred VanVleet who's out there. And so I just don't know that they exactly know what they want to do. And I think when I've watched them this year, I think Şengün is your best option. In terms of initiating something, it doesn't mean he has to shoot the ball, but to touch it in spots that he likes it, that I think puts a lot of pressure on defense because of his scoring and passing ability.
It's interesting. As I look at this up just now, Jokic didn't hit 27 usage until his age 23 season, which was his fourth season. So already, if we're just tired, like, I know patience is so hard when you have a young player, but Jokic was... You know, Şengün is basically as high on the usage chart as Jokic was by his fourth season. And it wasn't until his sixth season, age 25, when Jokic's usage really went up. Now, I know usage isn't the best stat. Sometimes Jokic is the ball's going through him, but he doesn't record a stat off of it because he just set the table and got out the way. So it's a little misleading, but at least just goes to show you that for unique players like that and for a unique system, sometimes it's a little slow developing. And guess what? Houston doesn't need to rush. They don't need to push their chips in very quickly. They have a lot of good players. The other guy I wanted to talk to you about, who we have not talked about this year, as far as I recall, is Cam Whitmore. playing a lot more lately. 17 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist last night. He goes 7 of 15. He gets his shots up for sure. 3 of 7 from 3. He's a good three-point shooter. He's a crazy athlete. And he has, like, I think, some all-around individual talents. That's my short, like, elevator assessment of him. He's got a lot of talents. He's super athletic. He has the important talents. I think he's going to have a lot of figuring out the game to do. But I kind of like this guy.
There's nothing not to like. One of the things I like most about him, he's kind of mean. He's got a nastiness about him. Like, he doesn't mind getting into it with people. And there's a competitive edge there that you can see. You know, you see the athleticism. That's easy. He had an incredible windmill dunk last night that he did so easily for a guy that's built like him. Like, you know what I mean? Most of those guys that take off like that, it's a little bit more slender. They can get up in the air and glide a little bit more. This is a big dude. He's like thick shouldered. And he's got crazy bounce. Here's what's interesting about him. Like, some of his production, Adam, he's only played 30 minutes in a game once the entire season. He's always in that 17 to like 24 minutes. Like, that's he always falls in there, but he's always super productive in the time that he gets. And he's continuing to, I think, become more consistent in terms of looking for the three. Those percentages have to come up. Like any young athlete that's got a knack for scoring, which he does, then that's the next step, man. Can you polish this up and become a 38 to 40% three-point shooter and work on a sidestep three, work on a backstep three? That's like the next step in his evolution, but there's nothing not to like about him. He plays hard. He's got a meanness to him, a nasty edge that you need, a toughness that you need. He likes to defend. And I think, he's got a very bright future.
He reminds me a little bit. I know they're different positions, but he reminds me of Jonathan Kuminga a little bit in just how they're both very strong. They almost look like football players playing basketball, but they have the smoothness about their game. That's, you know, oftentimes when you get a stocky guy, they're a bit of a brute. They have a fluidity to their movement and all of that on top of the extreme athleticism. If I was feeling particularly hot takey legs, I might rank him. And it's only been a year, so this is way too early for this. I might rank him number 2 on my most interesting Rockets players list. I mean, clearly Şengün is number 1. But you look at Jabari, Smith, Jalen Green, I'm throwing to the side. I love Tari Eason. You look at all those other guys, Whitmore might be number 2 in my positioning.
No, I like that. And I think I like the Kuminga reference. And what's, I think, stands out to me is he's 19 years old, and he never at any point has a look in his face or his demeanor or like an uncertainty like Kuminga has had for a couple of years. Now, Kuminga's broken through that in a big way. Had another very good game last night against the Bucks, but it took him like his third season before he finally started to kind of check into the game or like start the game, and it looked like, I'm out here to do some stuff rather than just I'm kind of out here to survive. And everything was rushed, and Whitmore doesn't look like that at all. He looks certain of himself from the beginning. So there's an innate level of confidence, I think, that he's got that Kuminga took a little bit longer to find, which is a good thing for Whitmore. If he can find it this young, imagine where he'll be when he's 22, 23.
Yeah. I just want to see him, like, the feel for the game, that basketball IQ, that requires somebody that wants to learn those things. And I think very few young players think of that as big of an edge as it is. Later in your career, you start to really realize it. But early on, we'll see. And I even think that was a bottleneck for Kuminga early on. So I'm curious to see how Cam Whitmore develops there. And his rapport with Ime Udoka will obviously be a big part of that. Let's compare these two teams now, the Orlando Magic and the Houston Rockets. It's always tough. Because one team's in the playoffs, the 4 seed, as we just mentioned, and one team's in the lottery, and it's always tough to kind of compare that, different conferences, and really Orlando is a little bit ahead in their process than Houston. But if we just go up and down the roster and talk about young core pieces, I'll go ahead and spoil my opinion first. I kind of like Houston. I like Houston in part because of volume, but also just because they have a wide variety of players. They have a lot of different types. And I really like Tari Eason. I'm super high on him as this like high level role player defender. And as I mentioned, those other two guys I'm really high on. And Jabari Smith, I'm pretty high on. He's a little bit of a mystery to me, but I'm pretty high on him. So I lean Houston in this for those 4 guys. But where do you go?
All right. This is a great question. I'm going to go the opposite way. And I'm going to give you my reasoning for it. And I think the best way to approach to answering this question, I was thinking about this. So if you had to take all your money and you had to invest it, In answering this question,
yeah,
it comes down to how risk averse are you?
Ooh,
because okay. because to me, yeah, there's more guys that fall into this category, I think, on Houston's roster.
Right.
Because the main three I'm talking about with Orlando are the three guys I mentioned, Bankero, Wagnerant, and Suggs, right? They're the main three guys. It's a shame because we could have a fourth if it wasn't for all the injuries to Jonathan Isaac, because he was, I think he was really going to be something if he didn't have as many injuries as he's had. He's 26 years old now. I don't think that that's going to happen for Jonathan Isaac, but he could have been another guy. I think he could have been like an all-league defender. But anyway, it's three of them mainly. That's who we're talking about. They got some other young guards, but they're not as interesting, I think, with the upside of those three guys. Houston has more of them.
Right.
And they've got some guys that, man, if it hits and it pops, could really be something. Okay? But there's definitely more risk if you're putting all your money into one of these teams that you're investing. Because I feel very sure about what I'm getting with Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, and Jalen Suggs. And of course, all of these questions are going to be barring injury. And by the way, I saw somebody put up there earlier, it's a good point. It depends on the coach and GM. But here's the thing. We're going to not answer the question that way. Let's assume that they're in a vacuum and that quality of coaching is exactly the same. Like, so you're not going to say, oh, yeah, well, I trust Houston's front office more to put pieces. No, that's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about this group as currently constructed and assuming all things being equal with the coaching and with the front office and the organization. Just the two groups. There's maybe more explosive upside on the part of the Rockets guys. But I think it comes down to how much do you buy in to Jalen Green ever being a guy that shoots more than 42% from the field? Like, I don't know that Jalen Green will ever do that. He's going to be a 40% field goal shooter. He's going to be a low 30s three-point shooter. That's what he's going to be. And he's going to have some blazing quick turn the corner, get to the rim moments. Wow. And it's some open court stuff. And you're going to see that stuff on the highlight. You're always going to, but I've seen hundreds of these guys come through the league. And I just don't think the efficiency is ever going to be there. You just talked about Whitmore. I like Whitmore a lot. I'm not completely sure what Whitmore's ultimate upside is going to be as a scorer in this league. And that's a big part of this conversation. Shingun. We've already talked enough about him. No question. Cornerstone piece. I don't know yet, you know, will he be the guy that you build everything around and you become a contender? I'm not sure about that, but absolutely love him. I really like Jabari Smith. Jabari Smith, I think there's a lot of potential growth there, but I'm not sure about that happening. Easton I like, but I think Easton's going to be more of like a really good role player in this league.
Yeah, for sure.
Banchero to me of this entire group is the crown jewel.
Right.
That's the crown jewel. He's already been an all-star, and I think he's just going to continue to get better and better. I think he's the kind of guy you build around because of his versatility, his size, and everything else. And then Wagner is kind of in the same boat, and I know what he's going to be. He's already averaging 20, you know, north of 20 points this young in his career. His upside could be 24, 25 points. Same with Banchero. And Suggs, you know, the way he defends is a guaranteed thing. I don't have to wonder about that, his effort. And I think offensively, there's more growth there. So I think, again, if you want the sure thing, you put down money on the Orlando Magic. If you're willing to roll the dice, that Jalen Green figures it all out with that all that athletic ability, if Cam Whitmore does the same thing, like if that's kind of where you're thinking, I'm not sure about Amen Thompson. I don't really know what his
ultimate
going to be. Yeah. So these are nice players.
Right.
I think Banchero and Wagner, and they're already proving it. They're two guys that can start on teams that are, you know, they're a four seed right now in the Eastern Conference. I mean, they're already proving that at this age, and they're just going to get better. So I think I'd go with the sure thing.
Yeah. I like what somebody said. I think T in the chat here says, Orlando has a higher floor. Houston has higher upside. I think I might like that take here. Here's one of the things when you start to go this deep, and by the way, you mentioned Jalen Green. I don't even factor Jalen Green into this for me. Like
let's throw Jalen Green to the side. I didn't ask you what exactly that meant at the time. I'm like, you're not including this guy who's third pick in the draft, whatever he was.
That happens sometimes though, Legs. And they just have so many other pieces that you're right about depth. When we look at a young core, after you get through your three guys, your top three young pieces, you can have a good fourth, fifth, sixth guy, but they also often fall to the wayside. Because you can't develop that many guys into a high usage role. So you have to kind of pick. And then oftentimes those guys end up getting moved on because you have to focus your roster a little bit. So I almost look at which of these guys are going to have a better, bigger top three, better three at the top. Here's the thing about the Orlando one. Wagner, Banchero, Suggs, I don't project any of those guys to be great floor spacers. They can end up becoming reliable shooters in certain situations. So then you start to talk about, can you build a roster around those three guys if they don't make massive improvements as a shooter beyond what I foresee them doing? And that's tough. Whereas when I go to the other side with Houston, I think that there might be a little bit more synergy. When you talk about Cam Whitmore, he can shoot. That guy, I love his shot. I think it looks really good. Very balanced. As a catch and shoot guy, he looks great. I think he's 35% on the year. So as a rookie, I think that'll go up. Jabari Smith obviously can shoot. And then Şengün around them. Those three guys just to me seem to fit a little bit better. And then when you get into the Tari Eason and the Amen Thompson, obviously you lose some shooting there. But I just look at their pieces and think there might be more logical sense with what they have as opposed to Orlando, who are really good players.
I think the differentiating factor for me is I'm just big on the ability to get wherever you need to on the court. And I'd like the handle of Banchero and Wagner. I might put that both of those guys over any of the guys we just mentioned on the Rockets. Cause like a guy like Cam Whitmore, you're right. He's got a nice shooting stroke and he's very athletic. If Cam Whitmore doesn't develop into a guy that you can put the ball in his hands and he can start playing like Jalen Williams in Oklahoma City because they're a similar body type, like, that's what it takes to like get to that next level where you're now looking at a team that's multidimensional over the floor. And I don't know that any of those guys are going to be able to add that. Jabari Smith, none of those guys. They don't handle the ball like Wagner and Banchero. And they're big bodies and they can shoot it. And they, you know, so obviously I'm very high on them. I like these Houston guys a lot. I'm just, I don't know. I see anybody. You know, Şengün would be the one exception that has a chance to get into that category, I think, in terms of status and stature in the league that Paolo Banchero is going to have. It's higher now, and I think it's going to continue to be higher year after year. He just looks like, the more I watch him play, Adam, I think this is a dude that can be that guy, that can be a star player on a team. Because of his versatility and size, they can be a star player on a team that does some damage and becomes relevant quickly.
Somebody in the chat mentioned Anthony Black earlier. We actually, when we talked about Orlando, I don't know, two months ago or so, we actually did a long segment on Anthony Black. So if you are curious, you can go back and watch him. He's obviously on our radar. Like Amen Thompson, to me, he's more a guy that we don't see enough of to really make a judgment on. But I like what I see. But next year will probably be the big evaluation year for both Amen Thompson and Anthony Black for me personally.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's move on. We have some quick news here to get to. The Golden State Warriors, after getting beat down in historic fashion by the Boston Celtics, bounced back against the equally scary Milwaukee Bucks, 125-90. This was almost as embarrassing for Milwaukee as it was for Golden State the other night. What, you know, I don't know if you caught this game, but just when you look at the box score and you look at the outcome of this game, what jumps out to you?
Well, how about an 87-point swing over two games for the Warriors, right? Lose by 52, win by 35. You don't see that very often. Look, Milwaukee's been playing better. We've talked about it. Their defense, you know, they held four teams out of the six wins under 100 points since the All-Star break. They weren't playing great teams, but he did have a couple of good wins too. They beat the Clippers without Giannis. That was a good win for them. They beat Minnesota right out of the break. So they've had a couple of good wins, and they beat some bottom feeders. But here's what reared itself again last night. This team allowed Golden State complete free flow of movement at the start of the game.
Right.
And that was Milwaukee's MO most of the year when we were hammering them. And then even when Doc first got there, and I've been watching them a lot because we're constantly trying to figure out when are they going to make their push? And it looked like they were starting to get there. And I thought they were playing a little bit harder. It seemed like, you know, he's mixing in some zone and the rotation was a little bit different. And I felt like the way they were talking was more confident. They had some more swagger. I thought, okay, this is starting to click. And then they come out last night. They go up 78 points to the Warriors. And the Warriors, you know, obviously they can make shots. They can string them together. But that shouldn't happen when you have such a size advantage, when you come out. And I just thought they were not prepared mentally the way you have to be against that team so they don't find that rhythm early in the game. And they did. And they really never took their foot off the gas for the most part. Golden State, this was a wire-to-wire job. But 40 points in the first quarter, you know, right out of the gate to the Warriors, when you have such a massive size advantage, that shouldn't happen.
If you look coming out of the All-Star break, Boston, Denver, Milwaukee all had win streaks going and looked really good. I mean, that's when you start to look at, okay, who's coming out of that break focused and sort of looks to be sprinting? Well, it was the three teams that were at the top of the NBA. Kind of interesting to me that all three teams lost within 24 hours of each other after building long streaks. So go figure there. It's bound to happen. You run into those games, but a nice bounce back for the Warriors who, because they have the high profile losses to the Nuggets and the Celtics, it almost disguised just how good they've been over the last 12 games or so. So they're a team, obviously, we're keeping our eye on. Let's get to the Karl Anthony Towns news. Meniscus injury. They have had, you know, obviously a fantastic season. He's been a big part of that. They currently sit atop the Western Conference at 43-19, albeit tied with the Oklahoma City Thunder. But the news drops today that he's going to be out for an extended period of time, undergoing some more tests. This one sounds terrible. No matter what, you're talking meniscus injury. This is what we talked about with Joel Embiid, you know, 2 months ago, basically. This, to me, feels like damning for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Oh, yeah. I agree on a lot of levels. And again, there's a lot of different degrees of meniscal injuries. I have a lot of experience with it, unfortunately. Sometimes you require surgery, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you repair it, sometimes you remove some. It's just all different. Either way, it's hard. It's hard. You can come back in a relatively, you know, short period of time. It's hard to really get back to that same level of movement and range of motion that first year. Especially when it's this close to the end of the season. Now, if this was beginning of the year, this was November, hey, maybe we'll see you after the All-Star break and you'll be perfectly fine. They don't have time to do all that right now. Now, the one blessing they do have, they have one of the better backup bigs in the league in Naz Reid. And Naz Reid, you know, fits in well with them. He gives them a little bit of a different look in some of the things that he does, but it's hard to replace, you know, Towns. And like, he's the one guy they have that feels like he always has an advantage offensively, always. And it's tough. You take him out. So, I mean, who knows? I guess they're going to give us more information here pretty soon. Although, I mean, we're still vague about Embiid. You know, what's going to happen with him? So, I don't know when we'll get information on Karl Anthony Towns. But let's just assume, Adam, let's just say he's out for a month.
Yeah.
Which would basically push him to right before the playoffs. And that might be optimistic. I'm just for this argument, let's just do that. What do you think happens to the Minnesota Timberwolves over the next, you know, 15 games if he's out that entire time? Right now they are in a virtual tie with Oklahoma City for the one seed in the West. You've got the Denver Nuggets a game
right
back. Clippers 2.5 back. Do you think then it's a pretty good drop off. Like, they're 6 games up on the Pelicans. That's a lot, right? So do you think Minnesota would be in fourth place if he was out that long by the time he comes back?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do. And let's just look at this, Legs. Here's their upcoming schedule. Ho-hum. 6-game road trip starting right now at Indiana. Tough one. At Cleveland. Yeah. Tough one. At Lakers. At Clippers. At Utah. At Utah. Now, it's a 6-game road trip, but it's only 4 cities because you have 2 games in LA, 2 games in Utah. But nonetheless, that's all road games. And when you get back from that, Oh, by the way, after a 6-game road trip, you have a back-to-back hosting Denver. Then you have Cleveland, Golden State. That's a really, really tough 9-game stretch to have to adjust on the fly, form a new identity, and it's that 9 games all while being on the road with travel. So I look at it, Legs, I hate to say this, because I think you're right that they could survive for a stint without him just because of their depth at that position. But when you look at that schedule and at the clip that the top teams in the West have been winning at, I would not be surprised if they fall all the way to fourth by the end of that 9-game stretch, because we're really talking about 2 games, giving up 2 games. And oh, by the way, you play some of the teams that you're, you know, in the standings with. So I'll make the prediction. I'll be bold about it. 9 games from now, they're going to be the 4 seed.
Well, let me ask you a question first, because I didn't really look ahead at their schedule. But then it's an excellent point. It's schedule is a big context with any team. This is a big one for them. And yep. I want to know, who did the Minnesota Timberwolves tick off in the league office to the extent that you play a 6-game road trip and come back without a night off and play Denver at home?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Who did they irritate to have that run? That's brutal, man. I mean, it's not like, you know, terribly long travel necessarily, you know, where you have to go. Well, but, sure. but still, at the end of a 6-game road trip, even though those last two are, you know, they're not back-to-backs, but 16th and the 18th of March, but still, you are so fatigued and right. anxious to get home, and nothing feels better than that flight back, knowing the next day, in almost every case, I was on these 5-6-game road trips twice a year or 3 times a year, every year of my career, that day off the next day, when you haven't seen your family, you know, you're tired, and you know for a fact, they tell you, don't even think about coming in tomorrow. Rest. We'll see right. you guys at shoot around, like whatever. But to have to come back and prepare for a team like Denver like that, that's really brutal. And then yeah. right after it, Cleveland, Golden State again. So, yeah, this is a really tough stretch of their schedule. Going, who knows how long without him, and it's very likely they could end up being in the 4th place by the time Karl Anthony Towns gets back, assuming he does come back at some point. And man, would that change things? Because now you go to looking at a 1st round matchup with, you know, who knows, a team that's going to be significantly probably better than who you would have gotten potentially as the 1 seed and whoever survived that play-in.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to watch. There, this is one thing I follow all year, Legs. It's just the schedule. And I know, again, you don't believe in back-to-backs, but they are a team that didn't have a lot of them in the front half of their schedule and now has a lot of them at the end. And some teams, it was the opposite of that. And it always comes out of the wash. Through 82 games, it comes out. But they're running into this injury at the exact moment when the bill is due, so to speak, on back-to-backs. They have a lot of games over this next month. So they're probably, we're going to just hit fatigue in general, and now you lose one of your core pieces that was giving you 33, 34 minutes a night. That's just going to be tough for them. So well, I don't know.
I'll tell you what, Adam, look, you know, let's not forget about the elephant in the room here. Well, guess what? This is going to be a significant stretch for Anthony Edwards.
Huge.
Let's see. We know how massive the talent is, but we definitely have also some questions sometimes about the consistency, shot selection, ability to close games like when you need to. Well, now, you know, let's see, man. Can you go in 8 to 10 game stretch of the teams we just mentioned? Can you go get us 30 plus basically every night? Put a team right. on your back. Curious. I mean, that's what guys on that level need to do in that moment, because you're not going to get any more necessarily out of Gobert. You're not going to get any more out of Mike Conley. Like, they are what they are at this stage of their career. You know, you'll see maybe some pickup from Nikhil Alexander Walker. Like I said, Naz Reid is going to get a ton of opportunity to play, but it really falls in the lap of Anthony Edwards here over this next, you know, month or so, however long he's out, to carry them. Let's see what he's capable of doing to elevate.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com.
Well, Legs, you're off tomorrow.
Correct.
Jason Timp from Hoops Tonight is going to be joining me tomorrow. Excited. I've been wanting to connect with that guy for a long time, so it should be a good show tomorrow, even without Legs. But because I want your opinion on this big game, which to me is like the biggest game of the entire NBA calendar so far, the Nuggets hosting the Celtics, both teams coming off of a loss after long win streaks. What are you looking for in this one?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, I saw where Jaylen Brown was listed as game time decision. So that's an interesting, that's the only significant injury that was listed. Nuggets have nothing. Here's what I'm looking for. I think, let's assume he plays. I think that the Nuggets got the game in Boston very much to their liking, the way that that game was played. Stylistically, the physicality that was allowed, it benefited Denver. Because Boston wants space and freedom of movement. They want to just end you at the three-point line. They weren't able to do it. I think this game means a lot to Boston. I think that they're going to treat this game they're on a mission right now, and there's been no let up, but they've been absolutely destroying people at home and anything in front of them right now, really, home or away. I think this is setting up to be maybe the game of the year. That was one of my favorite games played so far this year, the one in Boston. I think it's going to be the same way this way. And if Boston doesn't figure out a way to get the pace of this game up and get out of the gate early with a really effective, good first quarter, that's going to be key against Denver. But you don't want to have lost twice to this team when a lot of people think this is going to be a finals matchup. So to be able to win in their building when everybody's playing, I think that would be a very important psychological message for the Celtics.
I think the Nuggets are going to bring it. I'm very curious to see who handles the early pressure. You know, I'm curious to see who handles late pressure if this becomes a close game. But I think that both teams are going to have a weight to this one, just knowing, hey, this feels like a measuring stick game. Neither one probably makes massive adjustments, just because I don't think you make major adjustments in a regular season game against a team in a different conference. I don't think teams do that. You don't want to tip your hand too much. You don't want to over-prepare. But I think it'll be intense, and I'm just curious to see who handles the intensity. Denver, historically, in the Jokic and Murray era, has handled intensity phenomenally, as well as any team throughout history. 2-3-1 comebacks, obviously some big time performances in the clutch. But I want to see how they do it against this Boston team, and I want to see how Boston comes in and approaches this game. They're going to be psyched, they're going to be pumped up, but are they a little nervous? I'm so curious to see that.
All we can hope is that they give us something similar in terms of competitiveness, how hard they played, the drama of the first one, because that was a regular season classic. And I think these two teams right now, they would be my picks to represent each conference in the finals. And I'm really curious to see that game. By the way, real quick, before we go, there's one more game tonight that's very interesting to me, is Heat Mavericks. I personally think that Jason Kidd is in trouble. They are a sieve defensively right now again. And as everybody knows, I've been high on them when they made those acquisitions. And I thought, man, you got these two guys playing this well together, you get them in a 7-game series, that's a problem for teams if these pieces are all fitting. And it looked like it was there. And then all of a sudden, you look up at them, they've lost 5 out of 6 games, and they're just getting absolutely destroyed. They've given up, 130-plus points in 3 of those losses. And it's just not competitive. They look frustrated. Luka looks frustrated. He's got 4 straight 30-point triple-doubles in losses.
Yeah.
So, at some point, he's the kind of guy, he's a little bit petulant at times. I think Jason Kidd's in trouble. I think Jason Kidd is in trouble. And the Miami Heat are the kind of team, right now they're playing with a purpose. This is something you better be able to reverse this. And to me, defensively is where it starts, and that's coaching. That's coaching. Can you squeeze more out of this team and get more effort out of them and get better schemes and just have them on it? And they have not been. Very disappointing stretch over the last 10 days or so. And I just want to continue to see if Heat go in there and beat them, this free fall continues. I think Jason Kidd's seat's getting really hot.
You can't make a change this late, can you?
No. Not this late in the year.
I'm just saying, keep an eye
on the Dallas Mavericks right now. I mean, they're going to make the playoffs in one version or another. It might be a play-in team at this point. Who knows? But if they get bounced in the play-in, or they lose a first-round series, they lose a first-round series in five games, six games with Luka Doncic on your roster. I'm telling you, I think they'd be looking to do something over the summer. So I just brought that up because that's a game that's on my spotlight tonight, because I want to see how they respond to the way they've been playing.
You got Minnesota and Indiana as well. So a good night should make for a good show tomorrow. Let's quickly, as we get the outro music going, let's quickly hit our one super chat that came in. And it was from Jay Money. He says, when you guys reference Cam Whitmore, it's actually Slam Whitmore. LOL. We should call him by that on this pod. Perfect nickname for him moving forward. I'll tell you what. Not bad. Slam Whitmore kind of fits.
No, it does. It definitely fits the way he plays. That's for sure.
Yeah. You're lucky, man. Legs. Just a perfect nickname. No other nickname needed. Just legs.
That's it, man. Very simple. Very simple.
Everybody, thanks so much for hanging out with us. Like I said, legs will be off tomorrow, but I'll be back with Jason Timms breaking down what is going to be one of the best nights in the NBA. Hit that like button for us on the way out. We'll see you next time.